Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to Third Stream View here on BBSRadio.com for Monday evening, January 31st. Can you believe how fast this month has gone by already? And I hope you've all taken the tree down by now. So back here at Third Stream View, I'm your host, PK, and I'll be with you for the next hour, talking about some of the events of the day. And a little later on, we're going to talk about pharmaceutical and pharmaceutical drugs, and especially the ones that are being given to children, and not so-called illegally, by the way, but prescribed. So we'll get into that a little bit later. Here at Third Stream View, I give what is generally the libertarian view on the issues of the day from a libertarian perspective or a free market perspective, my take on things. And if you've read my bio, you'll know that I'm my own person. I don't owe any allegiance to any groups, any special interest groups. I can't be bought. I just tell it like it is, how as I see it, including the criticisms and my solutions to socioeconomic problems. I was going to mention a little bit about Egypt today. I think this is a good thing in Egypt, the revolution, although I do worry about what you get afterwards in a revolution. But I'm all for the people, and it's interesting that they prefer the military to the police. Well, Mubarak's been in there for 30 years, and he hasn't been a man of liberty. He is paid off by the CIA and the U.S. federal government. They pay Israel and Egypt to make nice to each other, where, you know, I would cut off all foreign aid. I'd say give them a year deadline. We're cutting off all foreign aid. And from this point on, Americans, or should be any earthling for that matter, who wants to donate or help other people in other countries, they're free to send a check. But no longer will the American taxpayer be taxed by force and without consent to support Egypt, Israel, and any of these other countries. It's a shame that our foreign policy has been propping up these countries and these dictators and these other nations. And to hear the apologists for Mubarak's regime here in the States, from Chris Matthews to, you know, last night I heard, it was funny, Steve Kroft was grilling on 60 Minutes last night. He was grilling Julian Assange. And I'm a fan of Julian's. And Steve was very pro-establishment gatekeeper. So that's what we have, folks. No matter who the radio, pretty much the mainstream radio personalities are, and mainstream TV, Fox News, CNN, CSNBC, yeah, they might disagree amongst themselves on a few things, but they pretty much are the status quo. And that's all I could think last night when I heard Steve Kroft speaking to Julian Assange. Steve Kroft sounded just like a centrist gatekeeper for the status quo. And that's something that Washington's worried about, as if, you know, as if we're supposed to be intervening in what's going on in Egypt and these other countries. And before I go on, I want to say also that another thing I like about BBS Radio is that I'm free to speak my mind, and there's no Zionist control or ownership of this network, as far as I know. And they're very good about people speaking their minds. And I'm very critical about things. Mine is always an expose on power. But more importantly, it's never connected later on anywhere to advocating genocide or violence or anybody losing their rights, their human rights, their civil rights, or their constitutional rights. But it's open season for things that I choose to criticize and critique. But back to Egypt. Now, this other guy that Mubarak has appointed, he's appointed a vice president. I believe his name is Suleiman. Well, he's another strong man, an authoritarian in the grip of the CIA. He's got a record of torture and rendition. You know, torture and renditioning, all that stuff that Obama was supposed to put an end to. Now, my view on torture was the constitutional view from the get-go. I believe it's the Eighth Amendment prohibits cruel an unusual punishment. Now, who in the military who are sworn to uphold the Constitution, although I wonder how many of our troops have actually ever read the whole thing. So who in the political class or the military who have taken an oath to swear to uphold and defend the Constitution, where's the argument about torture? It's the Eighth Amendment. We don't torture. We're not supposed to do this. And I've yet to hear someone give me a counter argument, especially from any conservative who supposedly supports the Constitution. It seems to me that many conservatives, they support the Constitution as long as it favors something that they're for. But if it goes against something that they stand for overall, like, hello, Congress, only Congress can declare war, well, then they poo-paw it or whitewash it or they sidestep the issue. But, you know, when I talk about the Constitution, it has teeth in it, the meaning of it. And it is not, to me, a living, flexible document, which is something that gets from the left or Democrats or liberals seem to think that it's subject to their constantly, you know, tweaking it. So it's been made to really – it's just almost a meaningless document the way – the lack of respect is shown to it overall by both parties of the one government head, one government party with two heads, or the one bird of prey with two wings. So back to Egypt, though, and the Arab world. As much as I'm anti-Zionist and anti what Israel's been up to, I do applaud the Muslim countries shaking up their own governments and kicking out their own strongmen dictators. Of course, Joe Biden didn't want to refer to him as a dictator. If the political class in America likes these other rulers, they're strong men. If they don't like them, they're dictators. But I keep hearing the word democracy, democracy. Well, I'm not very pro-democracy, and I make no secret of that. I'm pro-liberty, property, and peace. I am for a republic. Now, if you're talking about democracy, for me, as I understand it, democracy is the peaceful way which we choose and elect our leaders, and the democracy of the marketplace where every dollar is a vote for goods and services that we choose to purchase. But apart from that, I do not trust democracy. I'm not real pro-democracy. I'm pro-limited government and pro-a republic, which is ruled by objective law. America is supposed to be a republic. Democracy is mixed in because, again, the reasons I would like to believe that it's for the peaceful way we choose our leaders, and, of course, the democracy, the marketplace. But otherwise, I like that classic definition of democracy, which is like, you know, three wolves and one lamb voting on what they want for breakfast. I don't believe in majority rule, per se. I don't believe in mobocracy. I believe in individual rights that should be enshrined and protected in a strictly limited government constitutional republic. So I'd rather see a republic in all these countries. But just to you know, do their laundry and get rid of these authoritarian dictator-type characters is a good thing. Egypt has a lot of poverty. It has a lot that needs fixing, and foreign aid just props up these regimes. The leaders skim off some of that money. Egypt gets about $2 billion a year from the U.S., and I just read where like $1.4 billion goes to the military. I mean, those are mostly U.S. weapons and tanks. So this is weaponry that the U.S. provides these countries, and they can't afford it, so it comes in foreign aid. So it's American taxpayers are footing the bill for this. And both parties keep this going. I mean, I would cut it off. Like I said, I'd give them a year. I'm a gradualist. I'd give them a year. And after 1 year, there ain't no more tax-funded American foreign aid. And, yeah, there might be some problems at first, but these countries need to shape up. And a lot of these poor countries, the main problem with a lot of them is these are countries that socialism has failed to help and that capitalism has failed to reach. And when I talk about capitalism, I don't mean big business per se. I mean a competitive free market economy that exists without government subsidies and bailouts and protectionism and special privileges. So that's what these countries need. They need more foreign investment, equipment, machinery, production. That's what they need. They don't need more authoritarian rulers. They don't need more weapons and bombs. They need more investment in infrastructure, you know, factories, equipment, machinery, agriculture. That's what they need, farming. And all this militarism and tanks and bombs. Yes, every country, it's okay to have a small military and a defense. But the worst thing is what Mises warned about is not so much modern weaponry. It's the spirit of conquest. Not that Egypt has tried to conquer anybody lately, but they sure have kept their people down. And Mubarak, you know, he's been in there for 30 years. He's the propped up by the CIA. Until a few years ago, I didn't realize the extent that the CIA has its tentacles in so many things. In American universities, in the media, protest riots, they've staged things. They've, you know, they'll dress up. Well, they're the masters of deception, as is Britain's MI6 and Israel's Mossad. And they all work together doing their masters of deception, deceptions, if you will. And they go through great lengths to do these things, and they mislead the public, and they obscure the truth. They tell half-truths. Again, this thing about half-truths, I like. It's a great line from Lawrence of Arabia, where this British politician, bureaucrat, tells Lawrence that, he says to Lawrence, you know, people who tell lies, like me, we merely hide the truth. But people who tell half lies have forgotten where they put it. So I basically don't believe anything the government says. George Carlin does a great skit on this too. I mean, I don't believe the government's lies. I pretty much believe the opposite. And in the case of Obama, if he's for it, I'm against it. Generally speaking, I'm against it. I oppose most of all of his policies. And this puts me in a strange situation a little bit, because I'm very anti-neoconservative, and neocons basically oppose all of Obama's policies too, although some of them are soft on his pro-war policies. But so the neocons, this cancer in the Republican Party and in the conservative movement, they tend to agree. Well, we're in agreement more about economic issues and low taxes and deregulation. But on foreign policy, we're miles apart. And I would love to confront some neocons on the air or in person or on television. You know, I'm locked and loaded, and they will be questioned. And I have a few things to present to them, which will really put them on the defensive. I just need my chance. So as you know, I choose to remain anonymous on this show. I'm going to hopefully have a friend calling in soon who chooses also to remain anonymous. And I think this person is with us now. Q, are you out there?
Yes, sir. I'm here.
I hear you loud and clear. How do I sound there? Can you hear me all right?
DK, you sound great.
Great. Well, I appreciate you calling in. I know you have something on your mind that's bugging you. I spoke to you about it the other day, and I'm basically on the same page, and maybe I can further enlighten you a little bit more on the technicalities of it all or the politics behind it. Never math and science, because I'm an idiot in math and science, but I know what I know, and I would draw on the people who know math and science. And before we get started on this, I want you to know that in my corner, and hopefully your corner, I have most of alternative and holistic medicine. And by that, I mean, of course, nutritionists. And two entities I'm very big on and very pro is chiropractic and naturopathy. So, and homeopathy. So in our corner on this topic we're going to get into is holistic medicine. So please, Q, tell us what's bugging you that you mentioned to me the other day, and I was rather shocked to hear.
Oh, it just amazes me that nowadays, that in this day and age of so many different things, and I'd say a convenient society and different things.
Right.
We're always trying to better our kids. And I have a four-year-old. And I learned the other day, unbeknownst to me at first, was that he got labeled with ADHD by a doctor. In and of itself, I was like, all right, not a big deal. Doctors are going to throw labels around like they normally do and everything.
Right.
The thing that bugged me the most was that being a four-year-old, he was prescribed some medicine to take to counteract his ADHD, to mellow him out is a good phrase that I've been heard.
Right.
I at first was pretty livid, you know, about it. I've sat back, thought more about it, you know. At the same time, I haven't really accepted it that well because I have a hard time understanding why a four-year-old A would be labeled ADHD, and two, why in God's name are we pumping more pills into a child? I don't understand what type of philosophy we're teaching our children.
How did you find out about this? How did you find out that was he prescribed any drugs or given drugs yet?
Yeah, he was prescribed by a therapist. And
was this a therapist in league with the school or somebody the school recommended?
Yes, it's ironic you mentioned that. Yes, it was actually the school that started this whole thing because he was acting out a little bit in school.
Ironically, 30 years ago,
they tried doing the same thing to me. So.
But he's in preschool. He's 4 years old, right?
Yes, sir.
And they're giving him pharmaceuticals.
Yes, sir. To me, it's just, you know that, I don't know if you knew this, PK, but I found out quite a few years ago when I was a corrections officer that 50% of Americans are medicated in one way, shape, or form. 50%. So one out of every two Americans prescribe some type of medication to take every day. In the jail system, 90% of all inmates prescribe some medication.
Wow.
And what was always funny, I thought, was that their original symptom or whatever it was that they were trying to be treated for was one medication. But unfortunately, the side effects to that symptom, to that medication, made them take several other medications. It was just like a ripple effect. And they loved it. And, of course, in the jail system, they liked it because pretty much we made a bunch of drones and zombies. You know, after they took all their medications, it was really easy to put everybody to bed. So
it
was
kept them more docile, you know, then.
But a four-year-old, I have a hard time fathoming. I mean, if how a four-year-old is labeled ADHD, just because somebody says, well, gee, she doesn't want to, he won't sit there and pay attention for a whole half hour. Just like, well, he's four.
I know you're, you know, you don't live with the mother of your kid, but how did you find this out?
She called me. And I get him for visitations. I won my visitation rights, and I'm a strong advocate of all single fathers to really try, because it's some more work if you push hard enough.
Right.
A while, but at the same time, it's still weighted because a mother, being a custodial parent, has a lot of legalistic rights that she can kind of impose without you really knowing or having a lot of say in it in the long run. And she pretty much called me and said, oh, by the way, you got to start giving him these pills because he hasn't been having them every weekend when he's with you. And the doctors say that that's part of the reason why the medication isn't fully taking, and he has kind of like a little bit of a roller coaster effect because he's on them all week, he comes to me, he's off of them, goes back on them. And to keep a certain sense of stability, I was told over the phone, why don't we keep him on them? Then I found out, she says, well, he's been on them for a while now anyway, so you might as well just get with the program type thing. I was just like,
well,
I didn't quite phrase it that bluntly, but at the same time, that's not so many words, that's the way it came out. You know, I was just like, yeah, unfortunately, to make peace, I agreed with her at the moment because I said I don't believe in, you know, being disruptive to a child's life or the parents to argue, and, you know, the child being the side effect that he's torn between two arguments. But I told her I will definitely research it more. I'll find out who the doctor is that prescribed this and why. I want to know his logic. Whether I get the chance to belittle him or not.
That's how they're trained. And the pharmaceutical companies, they help fund the medical schools.
And
they have a DARE program. They teach kids not to use drugs while the schools are medicating them. And in fact, I redefined the term DARE, which in my humble yet all-knowing opinion stands for drugs are Ritalin everywhere. Now, here's the other thing about pharmaceuticals. I'm overwhelmingly anti-pharmaceuticals, but in a free libertarian society, pharmaceuticals would still exist, but they wouldn't have the political power they have and protection they have now. So, yes, we want pharmaceuticals. I mean, I had, you know, 4 surgeries last year, so thank goodness for them when you definitely need them for painkillers and this and that. But the thing about pharmaceuticals is that crap gets stored in your liver. So at 4 years old, he doesn't need that aspect of it either. He doesn't need that crap in his system. When I met my naturopath several years ago, I met this brilliant naturopath. One of the first things he had me do was a liver cleanse, then a bowel cleanse, and a kidney cleanse. It was all about cleansing. So
the
best thing you can do is get your son off of this crap and educate his mother about, you know, this, because too many parents, and I feel that she's probably one of them, they just believe what the doctors tell them. They throw up their arms, and they don't want to spend enough time parenting with these kids because medication is a shortcut. Meanwhile, there's all these commercials. They don't want kids using drugs. What kind of a mixed signal is that sending?
Well, that's what I find ironic, Fred, is that, you know, we teach our children, you got to be 21, at least of some type of sound mind and judgment to drink. Marijuana is mostly illegal, but now in certain instances it's starting to progressively become more legal. But yet I'm sure that comes with a certain, you know, parameters that you must meet. You know, you can't just be, hey, we're going to give it to a kid. You know, you have all these stringencies on all this stuff, but yet we can pump a kid with some drug, and he has no choice in the fact. You know, that's what also bugs me. It's like, this child has no choice to decide what goes into him. He doesn't like, I've asked him straight up, do you like it? I've seen his behavior. Yes, it is correct. It does mellow him out. I've seen it. You know, but now when he's on that pill, now that I tried it this first weekend, because I want to see firsthand the effects. And it does zone him out. He wants to have an afternoon nap. And his energy levels have decreased a little bit. I mean, is he still a 4-year-old? Is he still a ball of energy? Yes. But it's curbed.
Don't kids his age usually get an afternoon nap?
Yeah, but believe it or not, it's not all that healthy for them. They've proven that. Why? Because a child needs to expend energy as much as they can.
Haven't they been doing it up to that point? Then they take their nap, then they have more energy for the rest of the day?
I've seen him, and every time I dealt with him, I had him for a whole week. He never took a single afternoon nap for a whole week, and he had enough energy that by 9 o'clock, because you still want the kid to go to bed at a decent hour.
Right.
You know, I mean, if you give him that afternoon nap, trust me, he is a bear to get into bed sometimes.
They're medicating our children, yet they don't want us to self-medicate. So smoking marijuana, self-medicating, or taking other pharmaceuticals as an adult, even if you self-diagnose and you bear the consequences, that's wrong. But it's okay to give kids legally sanctioned drugs.
Yeah. Well, it's endorsed. Well, like I said, several parts are wrong to it. One is, you know, you have doctors, like you said, that are being sponsored by the pharmaceutical companies, you know, the lobbyists that the pharmaceutical companies pay for, you know, to to keep pushing this issue down us. It is a way to control the masses also. You know, I mean, I'm a firm believer of Aldous Huxley and George Orwell that our government was finds many ways to keep us dependent upon them and control us. You know, they destroy our education system, our ability to think. Even our simple language has been, you know, pretty much destroyed in so many different ways and our ability to learn. Also, if you keep the masses tamed, as I say, you know, it's like by medicating them as you see fit, not by what they want, but what you see fit, you can control them. And the other thing is they control the parents. They have the parents a little bit in a fog as to what they should and shouldn't do. And the convenience of having this makes it much easier for parents. You know, we're a fast food microwave society, and those societies based around convenience. And, you know, when you have a bunch of kids that are already been, you know, usually duped by TVs, you know, so they get zombified in front of a boob tube, as I like to call it, you know, watching cartoons, or they have some video game or something else that we use to lull them. Well, if they
endless
don't fall in that
games.
Category,
endless
they end up being very, they end up becoming labeled as hyperactive or whatever. You know, my son, all I do is I say, all right, you got energy? Let's go outside. Let's go to a playground. Let's go bicycle.
There you go.
And
well,
his curiosity.
The government and the school, in the government schools, I mean, I think they're deliberately dumbing kids down. I don't want to say us because I haven't been dumbed down. I've always been a rebel, and I think for myself. But I think, and that's why they oppose, and the teacher unions too, lockstep with the, you know, the public school system. They don't like homeschooling. They don't like, you know, private schools. But that's what kids need. And another thing about kids and pharmaceuticals distributed by the schools and their willing doctors is that a lot of these school shootings like Columbine and whatnot, a lot of these kids were on psychotropic drugs already, whether it's Prozac or Ritalin, and sometimes a couple of different ones together. I mean, what kind of message? Oh. And then the ultimate joke and hypocrisy, and I feel like calling them up and telling them what idiots they are, is it's so stupid and totally impossible, Partnership for a Drug-Free America. Are you kidding me? Something like 100,000 people die every year from pharmaceutical drugs in this country. And as I understand it, they're not necessarily ingested illegally. It's a allergic reaction or the wrong kind of dosage, not intentionally to harm themselves or others. So, you know, it's a joke.
Oh, I agree, and we waste a lot of money. But the only reason they do that is because, you know, I always joked around, the only reason, even as a child, you know, and in my teenage years when I tried marijuana, that the only reason that the United States government had it illegal was because they hadn't found a proper way to control and tax it and make their profit and their slice of the pie. Whereas pharmaceuticals, they have it. They have the endorsements. They sponsor it. They research it. And they got most of America hooked. It is one of the most lucrative industries you can ever get into.
Are you telling me?
With pharmacies.
Are you telling me you've smoked marijuana?
Yes, sir. On very frequent occasions I have.
Well, you certainly are not the sort of guest I want on this show. Why do you hate America?
Another thing here. Now you
sorry,
to
I was
sound
sounding like talk radio
like
there for a minute. Sorry.
Hitler, Seth, gave another way of controlling the masses, right? It's funny, we talk about this is ultimately a control of masses.
PK does not want to be controlled.
If you give people what they call an unbeatable enemy or an unattainable dream in which they will futilely try to go against, you know, they're in a war forever. They'll be doing something forever and forever dependent on the government.
That's the new war on terror. That's
they gave them this idealism. Oh, yes, and terrorism is no different.
To spend
a
endlessly.
A war on terrorism, things that we can never, ever defeat, things that really we don't even know who the enemy is. We give a vague enemy. So, A, gives the government all the power to support their cause, saying, this enemy is still out there. And B, you know, it keeps people always in fear and in need of the government. You know, saying, oh, the government knows that. The government's protecting us. And really, it's not. It's just mindlessly controlling you in its ways. And like I said, they start at early ages. You know, having a child. And the thing is it disrupts the thing you mentioned about Columbine was a good analogy, because what they don't do is, unfortunately, with drugs nowadays, back in the day, you know, drugs you'd hear, they got tested by the EPA for years. And they tried to find out what were the long-term effects. Nowadays, they pump them out like a new drug every other day, and they say, try it. Then you see 5 years later, there's some lawsuit by, you know, some law firm saying, did you try this? Guess what? People got messed up. You know, it's like, so I'm putting my child on something that I don't even know from 5 years from now. They might be, I might be the next one to be calling them up for a lawsuit because my kid's all messed up in that. Because messing with a child's pituitary, their serotonin level, and all that stuff at such an early developmental age is plain God. It really is. Because the after effects, especially the serotonin, like you said, the liver doesn't filter it. But a lot of it is, like, your brain only has a limited amount of serotonin in its lifespan. If you start tweaking with that, or even tweaking with how your body regulates itself, it learns not to regulate itself and becomes dependent on the drug to regulate itself. So should your body not have the drug, A, it goes to the opposite extreme because it has no regulation, and B, you know, after a while, in and of itself, your body knows how to become immune to stuff. So what do you do? Up the dose? Up? Try a new drug of choice? If not, you know, the kid goes on a lapse, or maybe this next drug doesn't work quite as well or whatever, and then you do have those Columbine incidents. You have some kid that is not well-adjusted, doesn't know how to deal with emotions or different things tweaking in his mind because we threw it askew with drugs in his system, and rather than let him do his natural path of thinking.
Another big problem that PK is pretty much almost totally against is vaccinations. I would never get a flu shot. I wouldn't want my kids to get flu shots. And kids do not, as far as I understand, they do not have to be vaccinated to go to school. You can opt out of that. As my naturopath says, if vaccinations work so well, why would you be worried if your kid is sitting next to somebody who's not vaccinated? You talk about drugs showing up 5 years later. Vaccines are even scarier, and because you don't know the effects right away. And they're giving babies, I mean, this measles, mumps, this three-way kind of shot. Our bodies are supposed to do this on their own. We don't need to destroy the immune system with vaccines.
Yeah, you know, it's like the mother who's a germaphobe ends up making their child have allergies because they never allowed the child's body to develop antibodies and actually develop its own natural immune system. So when the child finally does get exposed, I mean, a couple good examples of what you're just saying. You know, one, you know, when a child does finally get exposed without the antibodies naturally in them, they're more susceptible. The Indians. We killed millions of Indians when we first came to the United States, Native Americans, just by bringing unforeign disease, and they hadn't built antibodies. So we need to build antibodies. It's necessary in our body. The other thing is that, I lost track there. But, you know, the other thing with vaccinations is that, you know, we don't know a lot about it. Think about when polio vaccines first came out. People unfortunately are very shallow in their history and remembrance. They barely remember what happened last week. You know,
especially Americans.
Exactly. So if you went back into the 50s when people were getting polio vaccines, there were a lot of people that developed polio because of the vaccination. One of my friend's dad.
And brain tumors.
That exact case. So he got the vaccination, and then he got polio because he got the vaccination.
Yeah.
Which I found kind of ironic. But, I mean, have they cured that? Yes, they've done much better with it. But, you know, that was in the 50s.
But that also came from improved sanitation and raising exactly. people's awareness of that. That had a lot to do with eradicating polio.
Another one is, when they came out with thalidomide. I mean, there's another good example of drugs that we just threw out there, and nobody really cared or did enough research or something, and look what happened with that.
Right.
Yeah, I was a little young to actually know all of that during that time span, but it was a huge issue. And many kids were messed up, and many lives were destroyed over a pharmaceutical mess up, a botch.
Now, speaking of destroyed lives, you spoke earlier about having these endless wars on this and that. Well, something I've spoken of before, PK likes to call people's attention to again, is that this country's had been fighting several wars, which I will now name, and we haven't won any of these, but it's just been more of our tax money down a government rat hole. Now, I'll list them off: the war on poverty, the war on crime, the war on cancer, the war on drugs, the war on AIDS, the war on tobacco, the war on terrorism. We haven't won any of those, and I don't think they are winnable, especially when they're fought, quote unquote, by government. It's just another way to spend more money and to enrich special interest groups.
And at the same time,
the federal government, who doesn't want people smoking, they're subsidizing tobacco growers with our taxes. It's just madness. It makes no sense.
I agree 100%.
You should.
Like you said, the wars, everything that they keep on propagating to America, I like the terminology, just using the word war on something. Now, once
war
again, we don't go
state.
Much into history, and we ought to find out what really a war is and how the terminology, I mean, read Sun Tzu. He educates people about the arts of war.
Are you familiar with the expression "war is the health of the state"?
Yeah, it's because unfortunately the only person who propagates in a war is usually the government.
The government and the military industrial complex of today. You know, the munitions industries, but the politicians.
Yeah, whatever
industry
that goes behind it, and usually any politician that got their fingers dabbled into it, so they also support it at the same time.
Well, I happen to know you're a veteran, and of course, I appreciate and I'm thankful for our veterans for their service and their bravery. Okay, but
so am I.
I will never conflate that with foreign policy, and I will never back down. Well, don't you support our troops? Well, I support the troops, but I don't support the war. And what I've learned in the last few years, and I'm not saying this because I'm some kind of wimpy pacifist. I mean, I'm a gun owner. I'm all for gun ownership. But every war the U.S. has fought, including the Spanish-American War, and all the wars of last century have been staged, and they were not necessary for the United States to be federal government to get us involved in.
Well, usually there's always some hidden agenda that we, masses don't really know or are not privy to or are not a part of. There's so many different agendas. I mean, and usually they're more financially driven, if anything else.
Well, that too, but they're
in our best interest.
You're right,
but
they're staged by the globalists, and especially now they have all these thousands of people in national security clearances and all these government employees and national security, CIA, FBI, all this whole crowd, billions spent on this, and they're the masters of deception. They give us a obscure view of what's really going on. And they don't like the fact that the curtain's coming back, because when the curtain comes back, you find out what a criminal enterprise that the federal government is. It's about 95% beyond what it is supposed to be doing.
It's funny you use that percentage, because growing up, my father was in the military. I joined the military. Then my father became a police officer after he got out the military, retired. And I got to see, this is during my teenage years, and I got to see firsthand his side of the police force. And even though it was from a small hick town, I saw the corruption in it. And I was like, wow, even in such a small town of 3,000 people, even this police force is corrupted.
And it wasn't even a southern town.
And then, no, it was a northern town of all things.
I know.
And then I became a police officer later, a sheriff. And I went from thinking that 75% of all of it were hypocrites and wrong in many ways and corrupt to 95%, just like he said. And that,
And you know why? Because that 95% is the 95% they've gotten away from the Constitution and limited government. And yes, so you and Dad were in the military. Fine. We're supposed to have a defense. It's in the Constitution. Fine. No problem with that. But to impose it across the world and have bases in over 700 foreign countries, no wonder they're pissed off. It's like Ron Paul said. What would we think if we had Russian and Chinese bases in our country? What would people think?
Oh, exactly. Yeah, and like the old saying says, you know, absolute power corrupts absolutely. Yeah, and I wish that was my quote, but it's not. Lord Alpha Hayes. But the thing is we are arrogant in that aspect. You know, and the fact, and downright pretentious for us to go in other countries and do what we do sometimes. I mean, I use two analogies. One, when you're using the military over in a foreign country, the military, when it's used finally, it is not a scalpel. It is a broadsword. It has its purpose. And when used properly, it is a very effective purpose.
Nor is it supposed to be police
force. It's not made for diplomacy. By the time you get to... And this is even in the art of war. By the time you have to actually come to blows or swings, diplomacy is lost. You're there to get a job done. And that's a big difference. Right? And it's unfortunate. That's why, you know, even though I'm just like you, I'm a big advocate of guns. I believe in self-protection. I don't care if I had a daughter rather than a son. I'd teach her martial arts, too. I'd make sure that, you know, my children understand, you know, what it is to defend yourself and to protect yourself or to protect others.
How dare you teach your children? That's the job of the state, Q.
I know. Shame that I actually think that that should be a parental goal, is to actually teach your children rather than leave in the hands of someone else. You know, it is our child. It is my child and his mother's child. But anyways, you know, I mean, despite these facts, though, when you do finally go to war, there's a reason. When you finally go fist to cuff with somebody, you usually aren't talking anymore. You're not trying to sit there and offer them a slice of your toast. You're ready to kick their butt, and there better be a valid reason and a valid justification for it.
But there hasn't been.
Why are you doing it?
For us, for the U.S., Spanish-American War, World War I, World War II, Korea, Vietnam, Desert Storm, all this other, Iraqi freedom, all this stuff, there was no real justification for it. And the globalists, they exploit these events. They get the people worked up, and then they get them to go to war. And unlike in the past, the leaders aren't leading their armies. They're not like Alexander out there leading. They're not in, you know, they're sending everybody else's kids.
Yeah.
And exactly. They're even invested. I mean, the Bush family was invested with the Bin Laden family in, for example, the Argyle Group, which is, you know, defense contractors. This country is overwhelmed with defense contractors and all this defense industry, government contracts. They might be private companies, but they're all gouging at the tax trough. Meanwhile, I, as a capitalist, realize that this is sucking valuable capital and investment from other private sector companies making consumer goods. How many bombs and missiles and tanks can we build? I mean, that isn't going to employ more people in a productive system of market things from the marketplace, be it musical instruments or cars or radios, TVs, CDs, you know, whatever, chair, furniture. It's such a distortion of the market process and the precious capital. And we're rebuilding Iraq and Afghanistan, their infrastructure. Meanwhile, look what's going on in our own country. I mean, I know that you're scuffling. I know you're self-employed, and I applaud your hard work and everything, but you're scrambling to make a living.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, they're taking your taxes to bail out these rich bastards. And And I'm not saying this. I am not any kind of left wing. I'm totally I'm not a socialist or collectivist of any stripe. You know, I'm a free market capitalist. And I see what, you know, other capitalists should be opposed to this massive military industrial complex. I mean, Obama happily signed the biggest defense budget ever recently. And it gave the military about $7 billion more than they even wanted. We spend more on defense than all the major countries in the world.
Oh yeah, and the ironic part is, you know, I compare foreign relations to dating a woman. It's an interesting way of putting it for me, but you know, I always thought what was funny with Bush when he would preach on the television before we invaded Iraq and all this stuff. One of his mantras was, "We must win their hearts and minds
by bombing the hell out of them."
Well, exactly. To me, if I was, let's say, foreign policy was a woman I wanted to date, I want to win her heart and mind. Usually, if you want to win a girl over, I'm using this like an analogy, you got to know a little bit about them, maybe where they live, know where their country is, maybe know a little bit about who they are, what they like, all the different things that you would do to try to entreat her and win her over. You know, and usually you get to know them a little bit. We, on the other hand, most Americans and most of the guys, even when I was in the Army, we went to Haiti, we went to Somalia. Most people that I was with had no clue where these countries were until they became big news.
Oh,
you know,
no.
I mean, they know nothing. Like, you know, does the average person know what language Afghanistan speaks? Probably not. You'd be surprised how many people don't know what Pushtu is. You know, but, you know, that's their language. You know, we're going to win their hearts and minds, but we know nothing about them. The only thing we know is that they somehow complete some political agenda that is unbeknownst to most Americans.
But you can't expect them to know that because geography and history are the lost subjects in this country.
Yeah.
And plus, the American attention span is very short.
I was going to say the lost subject in the American society is everything but the Nintendo. But that and Facebook and knowing how to use your new Android phone the best.
America's resting on its laurels.
Well, complacency lulls into indolence. So eventually, you know, Khrushchev, unfortunately, his prediction will probably be true when he slammed the shoe down. He said, you know, America won't fall without a shot fired at it. It'll fall by, you know, inner demoralization and outer surroundings. And we're falling right in. We're playing to what he said to a T.
Well, since I'm a radical, I have radical solutions for it, and that is to nullify all, you know, any more federal law. If it's unconstitutional, just nullify it. But I would rather also secede, and I don't know if you read my secession solution, but I've discussed it on here, because Washington, D.C. is an irreversible cesspool of corruption. It cannot be reformed. It can't be fixed.
Well,
it is so huge. The fact that they're even debating about raising the debt ceiling, I mean, they should never do that. It just gives the drug addict more heroin than the alcoholics. Like, here's a liquor store. Have at it.
Well, one of my greatest mentors in life was this man by the name of Vincent Shaw. He's known to me as Bud Shaw. He died recently. Rest his soul. You know, he had a long life, and at the end it was a little rough. But man had really no formal education. Never got past. He never even graduated high school. However, he was a pretty shrewd man, and one of my greatest mentors. And his greatest analogy, I thought, about the United States government comparing is, he says, think of making a stew. And I've actually done something similar to this. He goes, and you got all the right ingredients, everything you think that will make a great stew, and you put it all together. But somehow along the way of making the stew, you somehow dumped in a quart of vinegar by accident. No matter how much sugar, throwing a pound of sugar into that stew will never make it taste good again. You got to start over. The ingredients are correct, But you, once it's corrupted, there's no way you can sit there and add all the sweetener you want. It's not going to change it. It'll just make it taste even worse.
Yeah.
You know? And pretty much what he says you got to do is just like, you know, the still wasn't wrong. The ingredients aren't wrong. It's just somewhere along the line, we tainted it. And the only way to correct it is start over, like you say. I have not privied myself to read your secession, your dissertation
PK Secession Solution, it covers most of these things. And one thing it covers also is that there is no government-enforced AMA pharmaceutical FDA triangle, because the regulatory agencies become the captives of the agencies they regulate. They're just like generals become lobbyists for defense contractors. It's so blatant, you know, and the ridiculous pensions and so much reform needs to be done.
Yeah. I mean, my version of secession is I believe in autonomy. I think people should become more and more autonomous. And now, I'm not saying that, you know, you throw out government and become anarchy, but if you were to look back into history in the 1800s at the local farmer, the average person that worked on his land and stuff like that, they were very autonomous. They were not regulated and didn't have to deal with so many things. Granted, they didn't have as much cushion in life.
That's why America became so prosperous, because they weren't so regulated. They weren't so taxed. America's not a great success, or it was when it was, because it's the city on the hill, shining on the hill, which the neocons and the Christian Zionists and the Christians want us all to believe. America was very successful for the two basic reasons that it started out with small taxes and small government and small regulations, which allowed for a creative outpouring. Then certain people began to tweak the system, and you know, big business, a lot of business doesn't oppose regulation, because they know that with their lawyers of armies and accountants that they can comply with the regulations, but they know that it hurts competitors or their competitors or new competitors. So when you look at the track record of regulation, it was supported by Republicans quite a bit, and they staffed the regulatory agencies with their own people back in the day. You know, so that's what we're faced with. So I want to be the great reformer. I mean, Thomas Jefferson said that he foresaw America breaking up into several republics, and he wished them well. Well, that's what I'm all about, because, you know, Washington's just too big. We don't need them. Every state has, you know, courts, police, firemen, hospitals. Washington's just an expensive middleman. They can't even do what they're supposed to do.
The original idea of way our government was that each state, you know, and I still believe it should be like this, that the state has the most control. The government is nothing more than, you know, it has very simple powers, the government actually does. And unfortunately, they've expanded their powers into anything and everything that deals with every stitch of our life.
Oh, of course.
You know, I mean, you know, and including...
It's all wrapped up in patriotism. It's all wrapped up in patriotism and the flag.
Well, it's easy if you simplify things to such a dumb denominator to convince people that...
That's what Sarah Palin does.
Well, I don't want to even get on to Sarah Palin.
Well, no, she gives those good feelings, but she's not specific.
I think just the mere fact that Sarah Palin goes out there and shows any representation of our society at all is a slap in my face, because I don't want that in the global view of things. To have such a pretty much ignorant person in so many ways. And I don't mean that to be cruel to her. I don't think she's a stupid person. I mean ignorant in the fact that she really has
She's ignorant of world history, world geography, and economics, and you cannot get a deep knowledge of those by cramming them. That's my main criticism about her. Plus, she had an Israeli flag in her office. She's another Christian Zionist. She's very pro-Israel. She's very pro-war, and she does not speak in specifics. And these are the problems I have with her. And the fact that she couldn't even stick out her term as governor. She could have postponed those lawsuits or whatever was going on, and she'd want to be president. She couldn't even hang in there as governor.
Yeah. You know, like I said, it's just a slap in the face when you know. I heard Penn, Penn and Teller, say, you know, I really want to support her. I really want to. But every time she opens up her mouth, I sit there and say, why? You know, and unfortunately, it is the truth. You know, when you start making stupid things like making up your own words, you know, I mean, really? You know, my college professor would have had a field day with me had I done something like that. Yeah, and here we almost go to the point of praising it. Yeah, we, you know, or we just let it be, you know, under the rug. And yeah, like I said, this is the person that is one of many of our representations of our of us. And
well,
that really bugs.
She's a nice looking mom, but and she's under the control of the neoconservatives too. And probably AIPAC. I don't know if she's spoken at AIPAC, which is that huge Israeli lobby group, but she's tied into that whole thing. And she was, you know, she's going down the same path. And unfortunately, she and others, they've infiltrated the Tea Party.
Yeah, I will say this about the Israelis. We give them a bad rap in a sense, is that they're no different than us in many ways, that the people, the Israeli people, most of them are very good. I've met a few, and I've had a few as friends, and they're just like us, you know, in many ways. And unfortunately, they're in a government that
it's an awful government.
Has very strong control with their religion. That's why I think their religion's gotten too much of a control over them.
But it's a secular theocracy, though.
Exactly. And the other thing is, you know, I mean, once again, there's another money machine, huge money machine, that drives its own agendas with disregard to its own people. You know, and the consequence, you know, which I pray doesn't happen here, theirs is such a volatile state that, you know, you don't know if the next bus you walk on is going to get blown up.
Well, that's because they've reaped what they've sown. You know, American blacks were never treated like Palestinians. American blacks, as far as I know, in the worst treatment they ever got, they weren't bombed. They didn't have their stuff blown up and attacked by armies. Yes, I mean, there was slavery and there was mistreatment. At the most problems that when Britain had with the IRA, yes, and even in South Africa, yes, people died, but they weren't strafed from the air. They weren't bombed. They weren't attacked like a Palestinians are attacked. And what really irks me is these are all endless, you know, endless supply of free American-made murder weapons. No wonder these people are pissed off the way they've been treated.
Oh, yeah, I agree. You know, I mean,
I want to shut the money off, Q. I don't want to give Israel a dime, and I'd also impose an arms embargo on them. And then I would cut off other countries, too. It's just, you know, America's broke, and they're giving these countries all this kind of – it's just ridiculous for so many years.
If we became a little more introspective in ourselves and didn't care so much about – I mean, if we want to be number one, we want to do all this stuff and help our country so much, why do we need to be all over the world? I mean, people say, well, it's for our best interest. Really? Has it really been for our best interest? You know, I mean, proof to me is in the pudding, Fred.
Show me in the Constitution where it says this. Show me in the Constitution where they have the authority to have 700 military bases. Show me where we're supposed to be the policemen of the world.
It goes back to the Monroe Doctrine, where they sat there and they started thinking, for some reason, we had to be the world's police. Nobody asked us to do that. Most people...
Right.
I actually hate the fact that we try to do that. You know,
it's
not our business. It really isn't. I mean, is it sad what happens out in the other parts of the world? And the thing is for PK, is that you can go, you know, nobody talks about the mass genocide that constantly happens in Africa. Or many of these other things that are horrible, horrible atrocities. You know, look what happened in Rangoon, over in Burma, and all these different places that I probably list a long list of things. We didn't care.
Listen,
we never got involved.
I hate to interrupt, you, but I got to wind down now, but I really appreciate you calling in and going over these drug issues. I know we got into other things too, but so much stuff is interconnected. And since I'm a self-proclaimed free market economist, it does give one an overview of many things. So I'm asking you to get your kid off those government subscribed drugs and try to get his mother going down the right path, because there's a certain amount of laziness in this. And believe me, he doesn't need all this crap. And I know you believe that. So I'm going to sign off now. And thank you again
for
calling.
Thank you.
Thanks again for BBS Radio for having me on. Your host, PK, here at Third Stream View every Monday evening, 9 o'clock Pacific, 11 o'clock Central, 12 a.m. Eastern. So I'm going to say goodbye now to everybody. Thanks for listening, and I'll see you next week here on Third Stream View. Good night, everyone.
Won't you take this message to my sisters and my brothers? You will find them most everywhere.